All right, here we are. Welcome back to Bookwave, the book club podcast. Today, continuing with our theme of books you might have read in high school, we're reading The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger. So my question to the audience is, do you think this deserves its place in the curriculum of the average English class? And if you had your choice to replace it with anything, what would it be? I'm your host, Scott, and I'm joined today by Pat, Man, and Will. And how did you guys feel about this book and its place in the English curriculum?
This book just kills me, to quote the main character.
It really just kills me, you know?
Gosh, it just kills me.
It really does.
When people are doing things and saying stuff like that, it kills me, man. It kills me.
Yeah. It's relatable.
The thing is, like...
And yet, people kept asking me, like adults kept asking me to read this. And I just call them a bunch of phonies.
Well, it's like in high school, I didn't relate to it at all. I just thought Holden Caulfield was an idiot and was making his life a lot harder for him than it needed to be. And then I left high school and proceeded to act like Holden Caulfield and make my life a lot harder than it needed to be by thinking that the world was filled with phonies. And now that I've come all the way around and I'm reading it a second time, it's like, oh... I get it. I see why they thought this might help me, because it's actually what we are all like in high school. But because that's how like we are, we repel it because opposites attract. And I was so similar to Holden that I pushed him away.
Or somewhere down the road of life when you're in your early 20s and you don't know what to do, you're stuck in this predicament of trying to figure out what you can bring from your childhood and what to prepare for in adulthood. And Holden is somewhere in between because he cannot determine how he's going to set his own life as he goes into New York and eventually gets transferred to another school. And the title itself is pretty much relatable because you eventually have to let go of what happened to you as a child and learn to establish a new form of responsibility if you were to, say, for example, look after a kid or have a kid of your own and provide them the essence of youth, of building a not so much of a like a Neverland-esque kind of deal, but just give them the temporary things so that they can eventually grow up and not stay the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, and when he talks about being the catcher in the rye, he talks about rescuing these children who just blindly go into adulthood and leave behind who they were. And when he's asked who he wants to be, he says he wants to be the person that rescues these children and helps them not leave behind their childhood. And it's kind of funny because it's just like he misheard the lyrics of a song. It's if a body meet a body coming through the rye, not catch a body. And he just completely misunderstands everything about the song, about a little promiscuous female, and he internalizes it all in this really deep way.
Yeah, and he ends up pushing others away, and he doesn't understand why. He just keeps on rambling about himself and these situations that he goes through.
Yeah, I don't think it's that he doesn't know why. I think he knows full well that he's rejecting everyone because he believes they're inauthentic. But what he doesn't realize is that he's the biggest phony in this book.
Right.
Because he talks about not being able to articulate himself or express himself properly. And he looks at his conversation with a couple of nuns that lasted half a breakfast, and he sees it as the most authentic conversation in his entire life, and he doesn't know why it makes him so happy.
It's interesting, because it's that whole notion of perception is projection, and when you are looking at the world and you're saying they're all phonies, it's like, well, they may be all phonies, and they're probably 150 other things. They're humans, you know, they're not one faceted entities. But for you to identify their phoniness clearly has something tied into what you're looking for in the world and something that you're afraid of. And that's obviously true for Holden, his disenfranchisement with all of Western civilization and his own existence is prevalent throughout the book. And he's cynical as a shield against his own emotions. And he doesn't know how to dig in and get over all of those things that are just haunting him all day. And as a result, he loses opportunities left, right, and center.
Yeah, and a perfect example of that is the girl that he talks about throughout the entire book but never contacts. This Jane character.
Old Jane. She just kills me.
Oh, yeah. They really line it up that, like, well, he's eventually gonna meet up with this Jane character and perhaps that's going to be a big development in the story, but it never really goes into that. It just keeps spiraling downwards until the very end.
Yeah, and it kind of leaves you feeling a little melancholic over the whole affair because it doesn't wrap up neatly or anything.
Yeah. It does kind of present his little sister as like the saving grace for him, but it still definitely doesn't have the happy ending that you expected, right? Like when you first start reading this book, it's like almost like he's just, you're reading his letters from a jail cell or something like that, you know?
Yeah, his memoirs from life after life. But it is
actually painful to actually read this because I'm sure many of us can relate to how we want things to be for ourselves, and yet, when things do not go well, we end up pushing those things away that we've always wanted to build up to, especially with people that we've either negotiated with or we try to plan ahead with them. And eventually they have a different opinion or they have a different perspective that doesn't end up going well. I mean, it's the whole expectations versus reality premise. And when things don't really go well outside of your head, you end up pushing them away and eventually you end up feeling guilty about it. And I can definitely relate to that because, I mean, hell, I can't even think of the number of times that I wanted things to go my way and ended up having issues to where I have to just reflect and just say, what am I really doing here?
Yeah, I think you hit on something pretty big with that whole expectations versus reality thing. And it's interesting, too, because like when you're doing your best to not have expectations or hopes and just trying to go with the flow and see how things turn out, you can get a little lost and drift away from what you're rooted in. And then when you lean into expecting things out of your friends, it's kind of like expecting a fish to climb up a tree, and it's just never going to happen. But for some reason, we end up falling into these patterns where we expect fish to climb up trees, and then when they don't, we're really upset about it, and then we curse the fish and we curse the tree, and we don't look at the fact that we didn't even see what we were looking at to be a fish, and we thought it was a monkey, and that's why we were let down.
Yeah, and a lot of the time it's not even the fact that you're asking a fish to climb up a tree. It's that you want the monkey to climb up a tree, but you're just not asking for it. Like, they're fully capable, but you're just not capable of facilitating that communication with them.
Mm-hmm. I definitely didn't get anything out of reading this book in high school, and I would totally, like, swap it out for a different book. I don't know what that book would be. I'm feeling pretty cynical, so I want to suggest just Berenstain Bears straight through to grade 12. Because I'm a little disenfranchised with the capabilities of teenagers, just based on my own experience and understanding. And especially when you look at like the Republic and the whole idea of forcing learning and intellectual thought at a young age, it just doesn't seem right. That time could have been spent doing something that was guaranteed to produce a result. Whereas when you try and make a whole bunch of children read a book that you think they're going to relate to because you relate to it because you're an adult, then you're so far from the point. Like, I feel like children should be involved in the curriculum when it comes to choosing books, because they know better than anyone what they're interested in.
Yeah, and everybody's different.
I actually remember while we were reading Catcher in the Rye and Silas Marner and The Chrysalid and all these different books in like the advanced English class, the university English, the college English kids were reading The Hunger Games. And it was like, well, how is that even fair? They're probably enjoying it. And I remember thinking, that's not fair. That's an enjoyable book. That's just a story. How come they get to enjoy their homework when I have to be out here reading a classic? Like, their author is still alive. That's not fair.
Yeah, it makes me think of that one quote. I forget what his name is, but it's in one of the Akira the Dawn waves. It's just, read what you love until you love to read. You guys know who I'm talking about?
I don't, but that's a great quote.
It is a great quote.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think about when we're building reading for kids. Like, we should be letting kids pick their own books for a little while.
And, like, that's not even to say that we don't try that, because I remember in elementary school there was, I think, Silver Birch and Red Maple, I think, were the names of the two different age groups for, it was a book club that you could join if you wanted to. And they had a bunch of Canadian books that were new by Canadian authors, and you could choose what you wanted to read and read it. And I read them. I enjoyed it. I remember reading books about werewolves, and I think there was a mouse on a motorcycle at one point. And I read all the Harry Potter books, and I enjoyed that. And then I got to high school, and it was like mandatory reading. And I signed off from reading for years at that point.
Yeah, for me, there was definitely like in public school, there was optional book, like you could pick your own book and then start to read it. But the problem was, I just didn't know anything about literature. So I'd pick like random Star Wars books, and that would be literally all I read until after high school.
My books in high school were mandatory, and I did not pay very well attention. And again, I was never given a reason why I had to read those books until I decided to discover them years later as an adult and understand the reason why they're so important. I spent most of my time reading Halo books, and a friend of mine offered me a copy of Dune, and when reading got boring, I would just watch movies, watch MASH, and just study what the characters are going through and all the hilarious moments, because I found them to be more visual than anything else. There's also a passage where Holden talks about Jesus, which I found pretty interesting, because he mentions that Jesus helps social outcasts, and yet it would be hilarious if Jesus was still alive today and he would see Christmas decorations all over and celebrating his birth, he would have puked. And of course, he's a bit ambivalent when it comes to religion. He doesn't know if it's true, and yet it's something that he decides to hold on to for a little while to help with his confusion and depression.
Yeah, he doesn't reject it, but he doesn't really embrace it either. Just kind of keeps it at bay. But it is a bit of a different time. Like, this book was written in 51, right? So Christianity was kind of the norm at that point. And you're weird for not believing in God. Like, his roommate, or one of his roommates at the very start, he's just like, oh no, you're not about to start shitting on my religion now, are you? And he's just like, nah.
Yeah. It wouldn't exactly be like today, where you would just pick out some of the good stuff that happened in Christianity rather than just rely on the bad things, even if you're not a big believer in Christianity.
Yeah, it's very hard to argue against the pros of Christianity. They kind of are quite prevalent, but that doesn't mean they aren't matched or overmatched by their cons. But to be stuck on either side of the fence, you're always not going to be seeing the whole picture. And I can understand where Holden would come from, not wanting to make a decision about his own spirituality. But I think that holds us back. Like, it's okay whatever your spirituality is, as long as you're not, you know, taking rights away from others in expressing that, but without making a decision, without doing that introspection and deciding and finding and discovering for yourself what life is about and if there's a higher purpose that you believe in, and being able to take that with you every day, you're going to get stuck in patterns and ruts and obsessions, and you'll realistically just be running from your own self without doing that work. And that's crappy.
On a related note, there's another thing that was interesting about Holden, which was his inability to take action over certain opportunities that were given to him. He brings up how he doesn't take up action because of his past trauma, especially with the death of his brother. And a good example of that would be just, I forgot what it was. I think it was when he tried to punch somebody, but he couldn't because his right hand wasn't working.
Is that like his fight with Stradladder when he was like sitting on top of him?
Right. Yeah. And how exactly he takes that trauma with him as he is going to New York. It almost as if he is relying on the trauma of his brother's death as sort of a dependency, because he knows that the future of adulthood has rules and it has consents, and he's not fully prepared for any of that. And yet when he thinks about his brother's death, it's almost as if he wants to try and get away from himself. And again, it's sort of like where he sees the child trying to cross the sidewalk, or is in the middle of the sidewalk, and then he's reminded of that poem, and he is still stuck in between childhood and adulthood. I thought that was really not just relatable, but also just well written.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I found that the book, like, for however good it is, it was well delivered, and J.D. Salinger's ability to create this character and write from this character's perspective and immerse you in the mind and the neurosis of Holden Caulfield was, that was a feat in itself, almost like reading Fight Club, that whole immersion into this sort of weird way of observing reality.
Yeah, it was almost so well written because it wasn't written that well. It was like written from the perspective of someone with such a limited vocabulary and way of speech. Just every other sentence ended with "and all" or "you know."
It's like a method actor, but it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
They completely put on that hat, and whether or not the camera's on, they are that character. And that was the experience through the whole book.
And the only thing I really knew about this book when I started it, like, I didn't read it in high school, so the only thing I knew about it was this was the book that the guy that killed John Lennon, he had a copy of The Catcher in the Rye in his back pocket, and he signed it and wrote in it saying, "This is my statement." And right after he put 5 bullets in the back of John Lennon, he just knelt down and waited to be arrested.
Well, that's weird.
So what do you think about that? That guy clearly relates to Holden Caulfield. What do you think drove him to kill a superstar like John Lennon? Think he was just saw him as a phony?
I guess, I mean, another thing that is brought up in the novel is his interpretation of adults pretending to be actors, and just the idea of acting on a stage or in a movie or in a TV show is fake. And it sort of applies to the corruption and the perpetration of adults that he sees. They're all artificial. They pretend to be professional class actors, and yet he believes that all the adults are actors, and he doesn't find them to be anything real.
Mm-hmm.
There's a failure to that. But if everything is a performance, then it becomes inauthentic. Then what does authenticity look like to him? Even though Holden holds the idea of authenticity, he never explicitly defines it or right. even talks thoroughly about it.
Yeah, I think the closest he gets to talking about authenticity was that conversation with the nuns about Romeo and Juliet. And you can see his like inability to express what he means. He says something like, I don't know what it is, but there's just something about that conversation with the nuns that I thought of when Phoebe asked me what I love or what I want to be. But you gotta remember, John Lennon was also the guy that said he was bigger than Jesus.
So yeah.
I'm sure the murderer in that account had a problem with that.
He even dressed like Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you gotta wonder. I guess that would be the extreme side of the scale of Holden Caulfield manifesting in real life, right? When you're so far from understanding your own thought process that you have to blame outward issues on the world. Like, obviously, killing John Lennon isn't going to change how you view the world. Like, it doesn't help at all. But to think that lashing out like that is what you're meant to do is a pity.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it stops this worldwide trend of how people viewed John Lennon, how he was not just a superstar, but just this really great musician who offered a lot of great music that supposedly ended up helping a lot of people, and to have that taken away from them is also a pity. So do you two think that this book is sort of has a place today within society? Like, do you see this kind of Holden Caulfield interpretation of what adults are today, or maybe just how people with higher ups or just children in general are?
Well, I think the problem that the book outlines still exists in the youth today. If it didn't, we wouldn't have books like 12 Rules for Life being New York Times bestsellers.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a window into the soul of a teenager, and this is something that many a teenager will experience. And if they're very unfortunate and incapable and inept, they will continue to experience it into adulthood. And it's just a fact. Like, you hit teenage years, you get filled with hormones, you don't understand which way's up, and you end up acting like Holden Caulfield, hopefully for a short period of time. Hopefully you know how to communicate and you have support structures in place that can help you work through that. But that's obviously not what's happening, especially not now that we're getting more and more closed off and separated from society at large, hiding behind screens. This is just like, this is the type of person that goes on 4chan. This is the type of person that goes on Reddit. This is the type of person that goes on YouTube. These are a definite type of person. You can especially find them in the comment section.
Yeah. Yeah. Internet comment etiquette.
And yeah, it sucks because you can't do anything about it, because everything that you say to someone who feels that way about the world is going to reject everything you have to say.
Yeah, and not being able to another thing too is not being able to actually go out and experience the real thing when you're just completely bombarded with what you said, Will, just stuff behind a screen.
And it's like you were talking about earlier, his attachment to his traumas, his attachment to his story. Because here's the thing, life is suffering, and every teenager and adult on this planet will tell you that that's a fact, and we all have our stories. But when you are so attached to your story and so certain that the world is wrong and so disinterested in making a change, like, what right do you have to do anything? Like, be the change you want to see in the world. It's the most wonderful quote in the world. And it sucks because there's so many people who have these stories and they cling to them. They think what's happened to them is who they are. And if they were to let go of the depression and the anxiety and the stress and the fear and the guilt and the shame and the sadness and the animosity, that they would stop to be who they are, when in fact that's not how they were born, and that stuff is holding them back from being who they're meant to be. But now it's almost as if we're creating propaganda to enforce the idea that you deserve to be triggered and that you are justified in being upset and irrational and that it's okay to freak out and lose your mind. And in fact, that you might even get a chance to be in the spotlight if you freak out hard enough at the right people, as if that would somehow change the world, as if negative energy would lead to positive results.
I would actually argue that it's sort of like a dependency, like a drug.
I would agree with you 100%.
In fact, I don't know if you're familiar with the website Commune, are you?
No.
No, sir.
It's a wellness educational website where they have all these courses on wellness, meditation, yoga, and Russell Brand is a contributor to that website. In fact, he came out with a course called Recovery, and he explains the 12-step program of detoxing from alcoholism, drugs, sex, emotional, physical trauma, and all that. And he puts down about 14 or 15 years of experience of him being a part of the 12-step program and just putting it out in a like an online course program.
I got that book. I've read Russell Brand's recovery book.
Oh yeah?
Like, it's the big book, but marketed to the masses through the medium of Russell Brand. And I appreciate and respect what he's done. But I have a fundamental issue with the AA and NA and all of the other A's 12-step philosophy that is rooted in you are incapable of not being an addict, that you are an addict and you need to constantly reaffirm the fact that you're an addict. And you at any point in time can slip back into addiction, and it's the support network of AA that's stopping you. And when you fail to reach out, you will slip back into addiction, as if addiction isn't something that can be overcome, as if it's a fact and that there are addicts and there are non-addicts. And it's just so wrong. Everybody is addicted and it's a negative behavior, and there are strategies to remove negative behaviors. Sure, you can relapse, but this whole idea of having to rehash your trauma of addiction on a weekly basis, I don't think that's the right way to go about it. And in fact, the success rate is about
1%. 1%? Is that real?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'll fact check it right now, but last I checked, it's about 1%.
Like, we're talking about the 12-step program, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
Huh.
I guess the whole point that I'm trying to say here is, when you rely on your trauma as a dependency, then you're not going to move anywhere forward. And the way that Holden does is just, it serves him as like a defense mechanism towards the other characters. And he ends up pushing them away. And what's going on now in society, where we just rely on these, you know, these blue check mark, all these
verified Twitter crowd.
Yeah, the verified Twitter crowd and all this other stuff that causes rage and disinformation and all that. It's sort of a dependency.
So,
it's sort of like a drug. And in order to step away from that is just to just ask yourself, is it something that's is what's really causing you all this pain, or is it something else? And if eventually, when you understand that, you can figure out if there's a higher power that you can rely on in order to help you get back on your feet and find your purpose.
So just to rehash, it's about somewhere between 5-12% success rate with AA. Obviously, it's kind of hard to get those numbers accurately because of the nature of the institution and how widespread it is. But like you're saying, Pat, like I'm not against a higher power and I'm not against going to AA, but I think you need more than just blind faith in any system.
Yeah.
Like a good, strong community is going to help anybody at least a little bit. And for a lot of people, that's probably enough to get over your addiction.
Just well,
to have
and that's
a once a week meeting place with good friends who understand your pain and your struggle.
And that's essentially the premise that Carl Jung put forward that AA actually latched onto and said, yes, this is what we need. He said you need a sense of community and a higher power to get through those things. And they jumped onto it and they said, okay, you need to believe in something and you're an addict and you need community. And they've done their best and I commend them for it, but we need more.
And that's basically the premise of the book Fight Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one more quote towards the end of The Catcher in the Rye that's is a quote from a psychoanalyst named Wilhelm Steckel. When Holden is hanging out with that one teacher, or one of his old teachers, Mr. Antolini,
mm-hmm.
and he gives him a note from an old psychoanalyst, and it says, "The mark of the immature man is that he wants to die nobly for a cause, while the mark of the mature man is that he wants to live humbly for one."
That's another great quote.
And those were the last things that he said to him before he tried to, you know, make a move on him in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Creepy old man with some genuine knowledge to give him, which probably dissuaded him from taking it that seriously.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that's the issue that we run into when someone who has something right to say has done something wrong. Being able to accept the truth and not undermine the statement due to the individual. Like, we have to be able to transcend the fact that people have done things wrong and accept that they've also done things right. I think we're getting to a place now where it's a lot harder to do that. One action can completely destroy someone now.
Yeah, especially in the age of Jordan Peterson. Won't even pay attention to him just because of things that they thought he said or thought he meant. He's canceled. Yep. Get rid of him.
Yeah, people don't research. People don't look into things for themselves as often as I think they would have in the past. And there's more misinformation now, too. Like, in the past, you could have actually taken your friend's word for something because it came from someone who knew what they were talking about and had actually looked into it with compassion and understanding. But now it's just, like, you can read a post on Instagram and within an hour, everybody thinks that this is what's going on. It's like, well, no, that was wrong.
Yeah, the question went from, hey, who told you that? So, hey, where did you read that? Was it this website or that one? Because that one's bogus. You can't trust them. This one's a satire website. You didn't even know that? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, literally, people quoting the Beaverton and Onion News. Like,
yeah, the Babylon Bee.
And people that don't even know that Snopes exists, and they just read something on Facebook, and they're like, oh, this is real.
Snopes is just as bad.
For fact-checking stuff?
Yeah, like, I don't know, anything political, they're pretty slanted.
I don't know if I've ever searched political stuff on Snopes. It's more like random crises that people are sharing on Facebook that I would fact check and then comment like, no, that's not real. But I got rid of Facebook for that very reason.
Yeah, there's too many people out there where all they read is a headline and they say, oh my God, what's the world coming to? I have to let everybody else know that the world's in trouble. And, like, it's a misleading headline or just fake news.
Well, it's a headline. It's literally clickbait. Like, it's not going to tell you what you need to know.
Not doing anybody any favors.
Now we've got people who read 50 headlines and think that they're caught up on the news, and they don't know a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
What a bunch of phonies.
Yeah, they're all a bunch of phonies.
It just kills me.
Just kills me, you know?
So that's pretty much it on my end.
Yeah, I'm good too.
I'm actually really glad to have read this book.
I actually have just like a quick 10 pages that I wanted to go through on sort of summary. So
okay.
Just sit back. I'm going to read this long dictation to you.
Sure.
I like your support. I'm lying. No, it was a good book. I'm glad I read it again because it would have sucked to go to the grave thinking that it was a bad book when in fact it was just the wrong time.
Yeah, it got me thinking, like, I don't think it's possible for one book to make much of a difference. Really got to be the combination of books. Like, I don't think it was just the time in your life of reading Catcher in the Rye. I think it was just the building of experiences afterwards. You can't really understand Holden's point of view until you've lived sort of it. Sort of the way through it. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, it was never going to be a good book until I outgrew what it was that it was highlighting. And thank goodness I have.
So in summary, I think it's a good book to read in college, I guess. After college, maybe not like in high school.
In a creative writing course. Or in an elective in high school where it's literally like an English credit on top of your English credits. Or maybe even a philosophy credit where you're just looking at the classics and you going into it knowing that you're going to be reading weird books like this.
Yeah. Of course, none of that is as good as just a book club that you started on your own and dedicated to your own education.
Hear, hear.
So with that, may the force be with you. Like, comment, subscribe. Check out our website, bookwave.club.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.